Hello, Podheads, and welcome to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. I'm your host today, Holly Spear.
This is Kate Carter.
And I'm Kylie Caldwell.
And today I have a pretty interesting case for you all. Some of you may feel a little mad, maybe a little annoyed. Some of you may feel like justice was served. I don't know. It could go either way. I have feelings about this case, and that's why I decided to do it. So let's just hop right in. It was a quiet morning in rural Tennessee. Just another ordinary day. That was until 20-year-old Holly Bobo vanished from her own backyard. A nursing student with no known enemies, taken in broad daylight, with only a few scattered clues left behind. What followed was one of the most extensive and emotionally charged investigations that the state had ever seen. A web of suspects left everyone asking the same haunting question: what really happened to Holly Bobo, and who is actually responsible? The town of Parsons, right along the Tennessee River. And it's like a lot of stories that I like to do. It's a tiny, small town. It's known mostly for farming, hunting, and fishing. And just like most small towns, everybody knows everybody. That means that everyone knows the Bobo family. Karen and Dana Bobo with two children, Clint, who's 25, and Holly, who's 20. They're your typical middle-class family by Parsons standards. They live in a modest home. One that Dana actually built with his own hands, a three-bedroom house with a carport in the back. Karen is a school teacher, and the dad owns his own excavating business. In 2011, Clint was actually studying to become a social worker, and Holly, she was attending nursing school at the University of Tennessee at Martin at the Parsons Center. While she was in school, she lived at home with her parents and her brother. She was just your normal college student. She loved hanging out with her friends, spending time with her family, going to church. Her family described her as shy and sweet. And she was a little bit known because Holly was the cousin of country singer Whitney Duncan. I didn't know who Whitney was, but she's pretty popular, I would say. In the country music scene, she might be even more so. So yeah, they're cousins, and I think they're pretty close from what it sounded like. On April 13th, 2011, Holly woke up at 4:30 a.m. She had an exam that day and she wanted to get in some extra studying. Her dad woke up too, getting ready for work. He ran into Holly in the house and offered her gas money. He left it on the bar before heading out around 5:30. Then Karen wakes up. She makes Holly lunch to take to class. She kisses her goodbye, and Holly's still sitting at the kitchen table. Karen heads to work. Clint, the brother, is still asleep. At 7:30 a.m., Holly answered a call from her boyfriend, Drew Scott. He was turkey hunting nearby on her grandmother's property. 15 minutes later, 7:45 a.m., a neighbor hears a scream coming from the Bobo home. He hears a girl yelling, "Stop, stop, stop, leave me alone." It spooks him so badly that he calls his mom. I don't know how old he is at the time. Maybe he's younger, but anyways, maybe the mom knows the Bobos. I'm not sure. But this guy calls his mom, and then she calls Karen Bobo at work. Around the same time, Clint wakes up to the dogs barking. He hears voices outside, so he gets up and he looks out the window that faces the carport. And under the carport, he sees his sister Holly. She's kneeling down with a man in full camouflage kneeling beside her. From this vantage point, Clint assumes that it's Drew. That would make sense because he was hunting. This guy's wearing all camo. Clint had even talked to Drew the night before. So he watches as Holly and this man, Drew, talk back and forth. Holly kind of sounds upset though, and the man is doing most of the talking. Clint says he can't make out the words that he's saying, but he hears Holly say, "No, why?" He assumes that Holly and Drew are breaking up and he really doesn't want to get involved. But he does text his mom and he says, "Does Holly not have school today?" Karen says, "She does." And Clint replies, "Well, her and Drew are out in the garage." 20 seconds later, about the same time Karen gets this call from the neighbor, Karen's now alarmed and she calls her son back and she says, "Clint, that's not Drew. Get a gun and shoot him." Now, what Karen knew was that Drew, the boyfriend, was hunting that morning, 30 minutes away on her mother's property. Clint understandably is like, what are you talking about? You want me to shoot Drew? He's confused. He's just woken up, so he's a little groggy. Karen gets kind of like flustered, frustrated, whatever. She hangs up the phone and she immediately calls 911. Unfortunately, because she calls from her work phone, she reaches the wrong county dispatcher. At home, Clint does grab his gun and he rushes to the window. He sees Holly walking, not being dragged. She's walking with the man in camo into the woods behind their home. Now, there's a trail back there, a path Clint and Holly knew well. It leads to an old logging road. Clint rushes outside, trying to catch up with them. He's calling Holly's cell phone, but there's no answer. Karen calls him again. Clint tells his mom what he saw, and she tells him to call 911 again. He does. Outside, Clint sees blood under the carport, right in front of Holly's car. One spot is about the size of a fist, and there are some others about the size of a coin. It's Holly's blood. One thing that the Bobo family did have going for them was that the community showed up and showed up fast. Within hours, 800 people had gathered to search for Holly. Posters went up everywhere. But as days passed, the story spread from local news to national headlines. Law enforcement from around the state came to help. Search dogs, a dive team, helicopters, boats, people combed an 8-mile radius around the Bobo's home. But despite all of that, almost nothing was found. Just those blood stains that Clint saw, right in front of Holly's car, the size of a fist and the size of coins, all confirmed to be Holly's. Then police are able to obtain cell phone data. Holly's phone showed movement, traveling north from the home around 32 to 33 miles per hour, and then veering off slightly from this line from the home. As officers followed this path, they found a trail of Holly's belongings, a notebook, then her lunchbox, then some school papers, and eventually her phone. The SIM card had been removed and discarded separately. Clint was able to give a full description of the man he saw. This man is about 5'10 to 6 feet tall, and he weighs about 180 to 200 pounds. He has dark hair sticking out from under a ball cap. He was wearing all camouflage head to toe. And he said he was even able to say that the pattern was something like mossy oak or like a very leafy camouflage. I assume that Clint's probably a hunter too. And when you say mossy oak, like even me from the South, like knows that pattern. So it's kind of descriptive, but pretty normal here, I think. And Clint was able to say that the man's voice was very deep. At first, investigators thought this had to be someone local, someone who knew Holly's schedule. After all, 7 a.m. is a pretty bold time to abduct someone. And that suspicion started to turn towards Clint, Holly's own brother. People were asking, why didn't Clint do more? Why did he just watch for so long? But if you think about it, Clint had just woken up and he thought that man was Drew. He thought that was Holly's boyfriend. His mom is panicking and yelling at him to shoot someone that he knew, and of course, he was confused. Authorities interviewed Clint multiple times, the FBI, the US Marshals. His story never changed. They found him to be credible and honest. And his cell phone records backed it up. He never left the house, and Holly's phone was already on the move when the police arrived. So Clint's standing there with the police. They're able to see his cell phone's not moving, never moved from the house. And they can see that while the police are there with Clint, Holly's phone is actually still moving. Drew, Holly's boyfriend, was also cleared. Cell phone data placed him turkey hunting at his grandparents' farm at the time.
The fact that Clint, the brother, went outside, found blood in the carport, but before you told us that, you said that Clint saw them walking into the woods and she was walking. So, like, though that was her blood, she was voluntarily, maybe not like she wasn't voluntarily, obviously, something was, she was injured in some type of way, but like she wasn't being dragged, like you said. You know, like I feel like that's a really big, why was she bleeding? Did she get stabbed? Did he punch her? You know, like where, and then to be able to convince her, like, you have to come with me into the woods kind of thing.
It is weird, and it sounds like that she went not really willingly, but something made her walk into the woods, whether she knew the person or he had a knife or a weapon threatening her to walk into the woods. It still is a really weird situation. So the FBI starts combing through criminal records, looking for someone who matched the description that Clint gave. And this is how they arrive on their first serious suspect, a man named Terry Britt. And Britt is a registered sex offender with a history of kidnapping and rape. He's about 5'11 and 200 pounds, matching Clint's description almost exactly. And he lives near the road where Holly's belongings were found. And get this, all of his prior victims were blonde, blue-eyed, just like Holly. At the time, Britt was already in custody on another charge, and he denied any involvement. Now, he's not in custody at the time that Holly was kidnapped. He's just in custody by the time police talked to him. He claimed to have an alibi. He said he was with his wife all day, but that alibi started to unravel quickly. He said his wife stayed home all day to help him install a bathtub. But when investigators checked, she'd been at work that day. And this receipt for the bathtub, it was just a handwritten note, and the store had no record of the sale.
Okay, that's because it didn't exist.
Yeah. This is not the 90s. This is, 2000s, and they don't have any record of it. That's odd. There were even reports that Britt changed his appearance after the abduction, cutting his hair short. And at one point, when investigators confronted him, he allegedly said, "Sounds like you have it all figured out. I'll plead to it." Despite all of this, police couldn't pin the crime on him. The evidence wasn't strong enough. The lead investigator who believed Britt was the killer, he's removed from the case, and a new investigator comes in. This new investigator goes through all the old tips, and this time, Britt is cleared. That's when investigators zeroed in on a new group of suspects: Zach Adams, Dylan Adams, Jason Autry, and Shane Austin. All four local men, all known to law enforcement, and they all had something in common. They all had criminal records of drug issues and reputations in town. Locals even nicknamed them the A Train because all their last names ended in A. And this is where the case kind of starts to spiral. Now, the people leading this investigation are the Tennessee Bureau of Investigations, just so you know. What's interesting is police had actually already spoken to the four main suspects early on when there was like rumors of these men being involved. There were whispers that Zach had once said to someone, "You're going to end up in a hole just like Holly." And there was another rumor, one that Shane had seen Holly at a coon hunt and was acting weird around her, following her, pretending to talk on the phone, but actually trying to sneak a picture. Now, this is a confusing and conflicting rumor because we don't have any firsthand reports to really even confirm it. But what did happen was early on, Karen Bobo, not law enforcement, actually tracks down these four men herself and confronts them, asking if they knew anything about her daughter's disappearance. Of course, they all denied it. Back then, there just wasn't enough evidence to focus on these four. But years later, new agents reviewing the case went back to what they knew about Zach Adams, Dylan Adams, Jason Autry, and Shane Austin. In March 2014, police arrested Shane Austin. They offered him immunity if he would tell them what his three friends had done. And he agrees. But when Shane comes in for his interview, he didn't give him what they needed. He said that Zach had said once, "I'm gonna do you like I did Holly." But he also claimed that Zach was just joking. So they're expecting to get a confession out of this guy. He says he's going to confess if they'll just let him go. And he's only able to tell him like this little bit of vague information that he heard, like, "I'm going to do you like I did Holly." And he says that's all he knows. Police are like, "Yeah, that's not enough for immunity." So investigators are frustrated. Shane says he didn't know where Holly's body was. He didn't offer anything new. So the deal is revoked. After this, Shane's drug use spiraled. His parents told Dateline that he fell apart. In 2015, Shane Austin died by suicide. His attorney
Oh,
blamed
shit.
it on the stress that prosecutors had threatened him, pushed him, that it was a witch hunt built on rumors instead of facts. So once again, the police are back to square one. That is, until Dylan Adams was arrested in Northwest Tennessee for being a felon in possession of a firearm. Now, Dylan actually suffers from intellectual disabilities, and he struggles with everyday tasks and has trouble functioning independently. Police see this as an opportunity and they go and question Dylan multiple times. And eventually, he started to implicate his brother Zach and their friend Jason Autry. He says that they were involved in Holly's kidnapping and murder. But here's where it gets strange. After pleading to a lesser charge on this gun charge that he had, Dylan was released, but not to any sort of halfway house, not to his family. No, prosecutors arranged for Dylan Adams to be released into the custody of a private citizen, a former police officer named Dennis Benjamin. And Dylan, he's never met Dennis before. So he stayed in Benjamin's home for weeks.
What?
And it's so weird.
Private citizen?
He's just a former police officer.
I didn't know they did like police foster care.
Yeah, that's basically.
Same.
Wait, did he not have any family that could take care of him?
He did. I mean, his mom was very involved in talking about this case and everything. I feel like he could have gone home with her. She was
Right.
the one saying like how weird it was that they released him to this police officer or this former police officer.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up.
Maybe that's a very sweet thing to do if someone has nowhere to go and you're just like, oh, I'll take them. I'm a former police officer. Maybe I can help them. Okay, great. But what comes out of it is a little suspicious. And the fact, like you said, if they didn't have anyone to take them, it would be a different story. But from what it seemed like in what I read and what I watched, because there's a 2020 on this that's really good, his mom and family were completely willing to take him back. And they were confused themselves as to why he would be released to someone other than them.
Just to let you know, in Tennessee, a defendant can be granted by court to be under the supervision of a private citizen.
Do you just get like an email from the court, like, hey, we're putting this guy in your house? He just
Your
got off
adoption
jail.
date is today. Yeah.
Hello, private
We
citizen. I would
found you
like
a baby.
to.
Yeah.
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 It's yours now. Congratulations.
That's so weird.
It gets a little weirder. So, in September 2014, the search for Holly Bobo comes to a tragic end. Her partial remains were found by ginseng hunters in a wooded area of North Decatur County, about 20 miles from Darden. The land was privately owned by a man named Gary Tubbs, who said it wasn't uncommon for people to hunt there without permission. One of the hunters, Larry Stone, said he spotted a large bucket in the woods. When he tipped the bucket over, underneath it was a human skull. He looked around and saw more remains scattered nearby. Investigators recovered Holly's skull, teeth, several ribs, and a shoulder blade. A bullet had entered the back right side of her skull, traveled forward, and exited through her left cheekbone. This was Holly's official cause of death. They also found school papers, her shoes, and a promise ring from her boyfriend, Drew. Just weeks later, the county sheriff gets a call from Dennis Benjamin, the man that Dylan's staying with. Benjamin tells police Dylan just confessed to the kidnapping and murder of Holly Bobo. Dylan told investigators that Zach Adams, Jason Autry, Shane Austin, and himself took part in the crime. He says they sexually assaulted Holly at Zach's house. But here's the issue with that confession, and it's a big one. Dylan had been in jail for almost 2 years. Then he was released to the home of this former cop, a man he doesn't even know. And only then does he confess. His family says he has a long history of drug abuse and mental limitations. They said there were many parts of the investigation that he couldn't answer. He didn't say who kidnapped Holly, how her body got where it was. They also said that while the men might have had drug issues, drug problems, of petty crime, they weren't murderers or rapists. Still, Dylan's confession was enough. Police get a search warrant for Zach Adams' home, the place where Dylan said the assault happened. And after an extensive search, they found no DNA evidence. But again, this is years after the crime. Any trace of forensic evidence could have been long gone. Still, it was enough. Zach Adams, Jason Autry, and Dylan Adams were arrested for the kidnapping and murder of Holly Bobo. A grand jury indicted them on charges of aggravated kidnapping and first-degree murder. The state announced that they would seek the death penalty. All three men maintained their innocence. All from a confession?
Word of mouth. all from this man's confession after he was living with a former police officer who has mental inabilities.
Seems legit to me. Okay, let's move forward.
Yep, sounds about right.
Yeah.
As co-defendants usually are, the three men had separate trials. Zach Adams goes first. He's charged with kidnapping, rape, and murder, with the death penalty on the table. One of the major pieces of evidence presented against Zach was an alleged murder weapon, a 32 caliber revolver. A witness claimed that this gun belonged to Shane Adams. Police had found it in a drainage ditch a few months before trial. But forensics tests, they turned up nothing. No fingerprints, no DNA, and ballistics couldn't link the gun to Holly's murder. So we just have someone saying that this is his gun and a gun that they found in the drainage ditch. The prosecution also pointed out that Zach drove a white truck, and neighbors claimed that they saw a white truck speeding near the Bobo property the morning of Holly's disappearance. Then came the jailhouse witnesses. Nine people testified that Zach had made incriminating statements while high or behind bars. Things like, "I'll kill you like I did Holly Bobo," or "I couldn't have picked a prettier bitch." But cell phone data, this is where it gets a little more interesting. Both the prosecution and the defense brought their own cell phone experts, and both agreed Zach's phone did not ping on any towers near the Bobo home at the time of the abduction. The prosecution's expert said that it was possible Holly and Zach's phones were in the same general location later that morning, but the defense's expert kind of disagreed. He said that they were never in the same place at the same time. Maybe the same general location, but like, what is a general location? Like,
Right.
does that mean the same town? Does that mean that they pass each other in this very small rural town? Like, what's a general location? And what's kind of the same time? We don't really know. So here's where things take a turn. The defense calls six current and former law enforcement officers to testify, including Terry Dykus, who is the original lead investigator on the case. Now, this is the investigator that was pulled off the case. And according to his superior, it was because Dykus was too focused on Terry Britt as the suspect. Just to point out, this is the defense calling current and former law enforcement officers, which can
Fine.
be kind of normal, I guess, but they're not testifying for the prosecution. They're testifying for the defense.
Are they doing a good job at it?
The investigator that was on the case that was taken off was, his supervisor said that he lost his objectivity. He had tunnel vision. But Dykus testified he simply weighed the facts as they came in. And on the stand, he made it very clear he did not believe Zach, Shane, or Dylan were capable of such a crime or keeping it a secret for 2 years. He even said Autry's story didn't make sense. The cell phone pings would have required the men to travel 106 miles per hour on a winding gravel road to fit this timeline. So, to be in the same general location around the same time, they would have had to be traveling 106 miles per hour down this gravel road to get there, if that makes any sense. There was also a palm print found on Holly's car. All four men were ruled out as matches, but Terry Britt could not be ruled out. Clint Bobo said that Terry Britt's voice matched the one that he had heard that morning. And then let's bring up the inconsistencies in Britt's alibi. Britt said his wife Janet was with him the day that Holly disappeared, installing this bathtub. Just to remind you, investigators couldn't find any record of the tub purchase. There was the whole situation with the receipt, that it was a handwritten receipt. The store had nothing that showed that.
That's so stupid, by the way.
Yeah. The defense's theory is that Holly Bobo was kidnapped and murdered by Terry Britt. He's a registered sex offender. He lived near Holly's home. He also lived near the spot where Holly's belongings were found. He has a history of rape, robbery, and kidnapping. So Terry Britt then takes the stand, and he confirmed he was incarcerated for kidnapping and rape. The state even bugged Britt's home at one point, hoping to catch something, but nothing led to his arrest. Also, another thing about his alibi, where he said he was with his wife all day. Cell phone records showed that he was on the phone with his wife for 3 minutes on the day he claimed they were together the entire time. So, why would he be calling her if they're together the whole time? Whatever. Then a senior U.S. Marshal testifies that Britt once told him, "Sounds like you have it all figured out. I'll plead to it and you can close the case." But no one ever follows up on this lead, and Britt then denies ever making the statement. To be fair, that's all hearsay. Whether he made those statements or not, he's not making them now. One other thing, defense attorneys said that over a year after their arrest, they still hadn't received a bill of particulars. This is a legal breakdown of evidence and charges. They filed a motion to dismiss, and it wasn't until years later that they received all the evidence they needed to mount a proper defense. On the fourth day of trial, the state calls Jason Autry. Now, remember, this is a co-defendant, one of the people that was supposed to be a killer of Holly Bobo. Autry originally claimed he was completely innocent, but now on the stand, he flips the script. He testifies on April 13th, he pulled up to Dylan Adams' trailer to buy drugs. Dylan was standing outside shirtless. Shane Adams was pacing around the yard with a gun, saying he had to get out there. Autry said there was a burn barrel going, and he suspected that they were burning evidence. He says Dylan told him that he, his brother Zach, and Shane had kidnapped and raped Holly Bobo, and that they needed help disposing of the body. So Autry says they wrapped her in a blanket, drove her down a remote road by the Tennessee River, planning to gut the body so that it wouldn't float. But when they laid her down, her foot started to move. She was still alive. So Zach pulled out a pistol and shot her in the head. Autry describes the moment in chilling detail, the sounds, birds flying away after the gunshot, how it all felt, and it was burned into his memory, even 6 years later. They loaded her body into the back of the truck and eventually dumped it near Kelly Ridge. But remember, that's not where Holly's remains were found. The defense points out that Autry's timeline doesn't even match. Cell phone records show he was talking to his girlfriend and his mother around the time of the murder. Also, Shane's mother testified that there was no burn barrel at the trailer and the driveway didn't have a fence or a gate, despite Autry saying that it did. Autry's story also completely leaves out who abducted Holly from her home. And this story, it's not even what he originally told police. Back then, he said he saw Holly alive at Zach's house, sitting in a green chair wearing a pink shirt. Zach was supposedly in camo shorts, a black cutoff t-shirt, and green Crocs. Autry claimed Zach told him they raped Holly and videotaped it. A tape was never found. So now we have two very different stories told by this witness, both detailed, one which Autry recanted. But it was enough for a deal. In exchange for this testimony, for testifying against Zach, Jason Autry got leniency. After 11 hours of deliberation, the jury found Zach Adams guilty of kidnapping, rape, and murder of Holly Bobo. He avoided the death sentence by taking a deal. Life without parole plus 50 years. And as for the others, Dylan Adams took an Alford plea, meaning he didn't admit guilt but accepted the sentence, and he gets 35 years without parole. Jason Autry pleads guilty to a lesser charge and he is released in exchange for his testimony. Zach would later tell 2020, "I was convicted without a single piece of concrete evidence." He says he used to dig deep into drugs and would say intimidating things to scare people, but he never confessed to killing Holly. And people had already been whispering his name before he even made those statements. Zach points out he's 6 foot, 125 pounds. The man Clint Bobo saw, 5'9", about 200 pounds, and is not a match for any of the accused men. Zach and his legal team have been fighting to overturn his conviction. They believe that the men were targeted because they were local. They had no solid alibis and they were known drug users. In other words, they were convenient. The prosecution has faced sharp criticism for missed discovery delays, refusing to turn over evidence, and repeatedly changing charges with little explanation. At one point, the prosecutor accused the TBI, the Tennessee Bureau of Investigations, of botching the case, saying they leaked info and let the killer stay a step ahead. In response, the TBI pulled their services from the entire district. As of April 2024, a court order remains in place, sealing many of the case exhibits. Zach Adams and his supporters continue to push the theory that Terry Britt is the real killer. His family even hires a neuropsychologist, Katie Spucko, who has taken it upon herself to review testimony, evidence, and interview witnesses to prove Britt's guilt. It probably won't surprise you to hear that Jason Autry didn't go on to live a quiet life after testimony. So he took the deal, testified against his friend. Now he is living a normal life. But he didn't go on to live a quiet life for long because shortly after his release, he gets into trouble almost immediately. Police respond to a disturbance on Morris Road. A man was reportedly armed and causing a scene. When they arrive, he takes off running. That man was Jason Autry. After 2 months in jail, reportedly for being a felon in possession of a firearm, he was caught again with another weapon and sent back to jail. While Jason was back in custody, Katie, the neuropsychologist hired by the Adams family, visited him. Jason agreed to talk to her, and what he told her was shocking. The interview was recorded and aired by ABC News, and Jason completely walked back his trial testimony. He said that when the case first started, he was going to fight the charges and go to trial. But then he was told that there was a 95% chance he'd spend the rest of his life behind bars. So he asked the prosecutors, "What do you want?" They told him they wanted him to testify. Not only that, he was told that Zach Adams was going to testify against him. So basically, cooperate or die in prison. Jason now claims that instead of remembering what happened that day, he made it all up. He said, quote, "I was trained." When he asked, "What if I say I just saw the body in the back of the truck?" He was told by investigators that wasn't good enough. Autry admits that he was given access to discovery material, meaning he was allowed to see the state's evidence, and he was able to tailor his confession to match it.
What my big question is, though, is didn't you say none of them fit the like appearance of what Clint originally said?
None of the four men, but Terry Britt, the
Did.
original suspect, did fit that
Yeah.
description.
Yeah.
So you have these four men. You have the first man, Terry Britt, who everything kind of falls into place with him. And then you have these four men, one of them died by suicide. You have these three men who all have drug problems. One of them's a little mentally incapacitated. And you have the police telling one of these men that if he testifies against his friend, Zach Adams, that he will receive a lighter sentence. And he does. He gets out of jail. And then he gets out of jail and he tells everyone that he made it up, that he thought that all of his friends were going to testify against him. He's given access to discovery material and he tells two conflicting stories, one to police when he's first arrested and then one on the stand. Both of them have inconsistencies that can't be true within the investigation. With what the police present, they can't be true, either of them. So we know he's a liar, but so therefore we don't know if he's telling the truth about either of these confessions.
Right. You really can't believe anything that he's saying just because of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Terry Britt, we couldn't rule out his handprint on the car. That was a big thing. Also, his criminal history, like the brothers and the other guys, they don't have rape and kidnapping convictions. Like, it's weird to just start doing that. And then
Yeah.
also, like, as a group, decide to do that together.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. I mean, they run in the same circle. They're like friends, all this stuff, but, and they're trouble causers in the community, but they don't murder. They don't rape. They're just doing drugs.
Yeah, drugs can lead to bad things, but like you
Yeah.
said, they're not rapists and murderers.
Yeah. It's not within their criminal history. There's really no concrete evidence other than you have these people saying, oh, he said he's going to hurt me like he did Holly. He's going to put me in the grave like he did Holly, which is all hearsay. None of it's concrete evidence. The only piece of concrete evidence you have to convict these three men, one of them's dead, is this gun that someone says belongs to Zach. The ballistics don't match, don't not match, but they are inconclusive. And there's no DNA evidence on the gun. The police found it in a drainage ditch. That's really all there is. I mean, I don't know. I can't say for sure what I think. Do I think it could be these three men? Maybe, but I definitely don't think there's enough evidence to convict them. You have this one one of the men in the friend group who's saying that, that they did it, but he can't tell a consistent story. And now he's recanting everything that he ever said and saying he just said it so that because he said the evidence was stacked against him, the police were telling him he's going to spend the rest of his life behind bars if, unless he confesses. They're going to give him leniency. He can live a normal life after this. And he does.
I've always been very conflicted with stories that are recanted. In some circumstances, some, just a few, it makes sense that they recanted their stories because there is proof that, like, the investigators or police were pushing them and pushing the story and trying to make them the number one suspect and stuff like that. But there's also a ton of other stories where the person 1,000% did it and then recanted their story.
My thing about Jason recanting his testimony is the fact that he was a free man when he did it.
Right.
So he really has nothing to lose. He could just say, no, I didn't lie. He really could be incriminating himself by saying I gave false information to the police.
That's like a whole nother thing, you know? Like,
But I guess then there's like pressure once he's out of prison and back home from the brothers and whoever's friends and family.
To like get them out. He's the only one out, like help them. So the truth is either Jason Autry was lying then or he's lying now. The state and prosecutors, of course, deny coaching or threatening Jason in any way, but this puts everything into doubt. Zach Adams' legal team is now actively working to get him a new trial, arguing that his conviction was based almost entirely on a confession that has now been fully recanted. And honestly, that's not the only problem. Many parts of Jason's original confession were found to be inconsistent with from what we know from the evidence. For example, his timelines didn't match up with the cell phone records. The location where he dumped Holly's body weren't where her remains were found. Details he gave about the house, the driveway, and even who was present didn't hold up. All three of the convicted men, Zach, Dylan, and Jason, have denied involvement and claimed that the state used coercive tactics to get what they wanted. Jason says investigators tried to get him to testify falsely. Dylan Adams, who is mentally disabled, said he was kept awake for hours during questioning, not given food or water, and was pressured until he confessed. And keep in mind, Dylan can barely read. His ability to comprehend the legal process is extremely limited. This case is complicated. It's infuriating and devastating for the Bobo family and for anyone innocent if they happen to be innocent. And at the heart of it all is Holly Bobo, a 20-year-old nursing student with her whole life ahead of her, a family who loved her and a community that rallied for her. Someone murdered Holly Bobo and she deserves justice. But justice can't come at the cost of fairness or truth or due process. This case is still raising questions, still pushing people apart. To this day, Zach Adams and his supporters continue to argue that Terry Britt, the original suspect, was the real killer, and that the state simply wanted a conviction, any conviction. As for Holly's family, they've stayed mostly quiet in recent years, but what we do know is they fought for years for answers, and they never stopped searching, and they never stopped loving her. This case has left behind a trail of pain, controversy, and doubt, and at the center of it is a young woman whose story deserves to be told. And that is Holly Bobo's story.
I am frustrated. Only thing I can say, I have no idea who done it, but I will say from what we know publicly, there's not anything or enough to convict any person that was brought up.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. I can't
It
rule them
literally
out,
was all,
but yeah, word of mouth.
and I want to know why Terry Britt, the original suspect, was ruled out.
I would say he's really my only suspect.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe there's this amazing suspect out here. And I say amazing as in like the pieces line up and the palm print matches and all of this stuff, but it doesn't match the three people that went to jail for it.
Right.
And really, all we have is word of mouth and word of mouth of these suspects against each other, these co-defendants against each other, which we know happens. I agree with Kylie. Like, I don't know who did it, but I know that the people in jail don't have enough evidence against them to be there.
I'm kind of pissed off at the jury.
Yeah.
I know. To be honest, this case reminded me a lot of the West Memphis 3
Yeah.
case.
Yeah, dude, that case. Oh, I still get anxiety today from that case.
I mean, you just have these very much trouble causers in the community that have it problems with drugs and problems with like maybe petty crime here and there, but police just need somebody to, I don't know.
They're easy targets.
It's an easy answer, yeah.
Yep, easy targets, easy answer. They have what they consider enough evidence.
I want to know if police like actually went and looked at this bathtub. Like you can tell if a bathtub's like new.
Right.
Yeah.
I ain't believing that shit for one second with a handwritten note. We're in what,
Yeah.
2010, 2011? Like, absolutely not.
There was also a source that I read that said that he said he was with his Terry Britt said he was with his wife all day, but she had actually gone in to work and like clocked in, and then he made her come home
That's an alibi.
right as all of this information was getting released about the disappearance of Holly Bobo. Because if you remember, it was like
Yeah.
hours within minutes of when she disappeared that people started scrambling to look for her. So,
Yeah, he in my head, if I had to pin somebody, it would have been him. Just the appearance changing, his words, his actions, all of it kind of, there's obviously no physical anything, but he
it's
guilty.
pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a frustrating story, Holly. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
And it's not like one I can go, like, Kylie and I aren't tonight going to go into a black hole, like, rabbit hole, trying to read and figure out what happened. Like, you told
Yeah.
us. It's not, there's just no good conclusion.
I mean, and what I do know is we've seen cases that are a lot older than this get solved because of new evidence, or, you know, they find something in the woods or they find some new piece of evidence that can lead to exonerate someone or what have you. So maybe that'll still happen. It's not a super old case, but unless they investigate or someone just happens to stumble upon evidence, I don't know. Hopefully things will change, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're not going to investigate because it's closed.
Closed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's jump into something happier.
This is kind of old news, but it's been something I've been thinking about ever since. I mean, before Trump was inaugurated, he started talking about buying Greenland, you know, for, I guess, for the minerals, the oils, and whatever fossils. I don't know anything about minerals, but. It got me thinking, if we could buy any country, what country would I want to buy? And I've thought long and deep about this, and I've decided. I think we should buy Germany.
I feel like you have a dark reason behind that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one is just like retribution for what they did.
Yeah.
Y'all kind of fucked it up. Maybe we should take a turn. Also, I think good location in the
Yeah.
middle of Europe. If we, as US citizens, could just pop over there, you know, pop around, I think it's good. Beer, pretzels,
Pretzels,
chicken schnitzel,
schnitzels.
wiener dogs. Like, pretty much every dog is German. So, dogs, first off, they can keep the sauerkraut.
You don't love a good
Yeah.
sauerkraut? No.
I like a Reuben, but I don't want a side of sauerkraut on my
Keep
plate.
the sauerkraut for Yolanta. She loves it.
Yolanta would love the sauerkraut.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, Kate, would you buy Poland? Like, no price tag.
Obviously, Poland would probably be the first choice to support the fam, reunite, if one dare say. But then I would go to war with your USA Germany. In hindsight, yes, I would do like Poland, France, Switzerland. Like those would probably be some of my top choices. But if I was going smart wise, I'd probably take on like India or Russia.
Yeah, I think we should free the people of Russia
Yeah.
from Putin.
Yeah, I ain't even go I'm not touching North Korea. Like, I'm sorry.
No,
If you can't dig a tunnel on your own, I ain't doing it. But I think India would be a major purchase, like huge. And then Russia would actually be a very strong purchase, but those aren't fun. So I'm gonna go with Poland or Switzerland. Switzerland's a good one too. They're very neutral.
I was gonna say Switzerland would be nice.
Yeah.
Denmark would be nice. Maybe they could teach us a few things.
Yeah.
I still think Canada would be cool, but I don't want them unless they want us, you know?
They don't want us, trust
I
me.
know.
They don't.
I
We
know.
want
That's
them,
fine. That's
but they don't want
fine.
us.
Yeah, they don't. Denmark, I guess Denmark's going to be my number one then.
Denmark owns Greenland. So I think if we
All
buy
right.
Denmark, we get
That's
Greenland.
perfect.
A win-win.
Two for one, BOGO.
Yep.
It's
BOGO
a BOGO sale.
sale.
I forgot that. I think someone told me that one time. I didn't know it on my own accord, but someone told me that. Maybe it was Luke.
It was me. It was
Oh.
probably Kylie.
Oh.
Because I covered a case in Greenland. Thank you very much.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. I want Denmark because I want Greenland.
Oh, what about Italy? So small, though. Like, is it worth the food and the people?
Italian people. No, I take it
No,
back.
but they're very.
Italian American people are annoying.
That I was gonna say, you got the mafia.
I'm specifically talking about the Italians up in like New Jersey.
Yes. We're gonna
Actual
get canceled.
Italians. That's fine. I'll talk shit about them. I got beef with Australians.
I love my Australian that I'm friends with, but I would not take that country for a heartbeat because of the size of their insects.
They got animals that should not exist.
No. And they're too expensive. It's hot. It's gorgeous, but too expensive.
The breakdancing, like, just really turned me off a lot.
Honestly, it was like an ick.
Yeah, you can keep whatever that is.
We should do our icks of countries.
Okay, well, my ick with South Korea is how come they haven't overtaken North Korea yet?
They don't want to. They don't want anything to do with them.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. Actually, they have the DMV, so they can go right there and see everything. I actually don't know. That's a good question. I would phone a friend, but she's working right now, who's Korean, South Korean. But why haven't they?
It like
Is there a reason? Are they working with them?
from what I've seen, North Korea, they got missiles, but they can't even get them off the ground. South Korea, you have like mandatory military enlistment,
Yeah.
You got the people, you got the power. Let's end this whole Kim Jong-un thing.
Is there an agree? Yeah, that's a good question, Kylie.
We'll phone our friend in South Korea.
Yeah, we will. We will.
Stand by.
We'll ask her what she's doing.
She's probably sleeping.
Wonder
What
what
time
she's
is
doing.
it there?
Let me see what's going on. I'm gonna look at her location.
Please leave your message for 70.
Question. Why hasn't South Korea taken over North Korea? Should I preface that with I'm in a podcast right now?
No, I think it's better if you don't. Tune in next week for the answer from
Yeah.
the US ambassador to South Korea.
And with that, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to our channel on Spotify and Apple Podcasts so you don't miss an episode. Send this to another true crime lover if you enjoyed it. And we will see you next week for another case. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.